Welcome to Noon Edition. I'm Bob Zaltzberg, editor of the Herald Times, and today we're going to talk about the topic of religious diversity. We have several guests in the studio with us today. We have four, actually. Mary Catherine couldn't be with us, but I have four guests. Zeynep Bistrabadi is here. She's a lecturer for Indiana University's Department of Near Eastern Languages and Cultures, a member of the Bloomington Muslim community, and she's a graduate of Bloomington High School North and Indiana University. Rabbi Mira Wasserman of Congregation Beth Shalom is with us. Byron Bangert, Presbyterian minister at large and one of the founders of the Monroe County Religious Leaders Organization is here. And Arja Rinpoche, the director of the Tibetan Cultural Center, is also with us today. If you have questions or comments, please phone us at 855-0811 or 877-285-9348, or you can send your email to noon@indiana.edu. And I'd like to welcome all of you. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Good to be here.
Some are having return visits and some are here for the first time. The timing of this show is probably very interesting. I mean, and I'm going to turn to Rinpoche first because we have the death of Professor Norbu,
yes.
Who has been very instrumental in the Tibetan Cultural Center and the community here. And I want you just to talk about his life and death a little bit, if you could.
Yes. Professor Norbu is a retired professor from IU, and actually he founded the Tibetan Cultural Center in Bloomington, Indiana. So two and a half years ago, His Holiness Dalai Lama asked me to work with his center. Then actually we had the new missions like include that's Mongolian society. So that's why we changed the name. Now we call it Tibetan Mongolian Buddhist Cultural Center. So anyway, last week, and fortunately, he, just peacefully passed away. So then right after that, so we report this to His Holiness and His Holiness' private office. And then office actually directly give that kind of mission or duty to me and in charge of everything. Also, of course, the family. So then the Professor Norbu has family and wife and the three sons in the town. So that's why that's this private thing. We also, ask them to in charge of that personal thing. So that's actually for his death. Last few days we did the Tibetan Buddhist, traditional very kind of funeral. So that's very the ceremonies went so well, and he's unfortunately passed away. But he's elder and very. Ill, like so many years. So that's just one hand like a blessing. Mm-hmm. Then talking about his life a little bit, and in the 50s, because the Chinese occupation, then he escaped. Then he was in the United States. So that time, his idea is fight back the Chinese and searching for, 100% independence of Tibet. So then the 60s, then His Holiness said that this is not a really good idea. And then 70s, His Holiness decided to middle way approach, which is non-violent and the discussion under this Chinese, that's law and the constitution, searching for genuine autonomy. So that's kind of a little bit complex, mm-hmm. But even though His Holiness, the Dalai Lama always say that, personally, that's concept or that's point of view is a little bit different. But the goal is to preserve Tibetan culture and introduce Tibetan Buddhism to the West. So actually, Norbu did that's a lot. So that's a kind of accomplishment to his life.
Mm-hmm. Could you talk a little bit before we we leave this topic, could you talk a little bit about the ceremony and some of the beliefs and traditions behind the ceremony?
Yes, yes. So actually, the Buddhist belief that, the life has continuation. So then this life and the of course, the past life and the future life. So this life, just like, one period time in this time. So after that's passed, then he is in intermediate life, which we call bardo. Through that's bardo 49 days, and then we'll have a rebirth. So that is our concept. And then, of course, we did the fire puja, which means like, Tibetan Buddhist traditional cremation. We asked permit from the governor and the mayor, and they're very supportive, and they give permission like that. And then we did a very interesting stupa back there, and lots of people gathered, of course, his friends and students in Western society, and Tibetans and Mongolians all gathered together. Then monks said prayers. Then we did his body as like a Buddha statue, then put in that special stupa, and then we cremate it. So then the idea is after 49 days we say prayers, then he will have a rebirth. And then after 1 year, then we can find his reincarnation. So this is the idea to reincarnation to continue, the hold that's to preserve Tibetan culture and so on. So,
mm-hmm. I want to turn to the rest of you because I think this week has been a good example of how religious and cultural diversity sort of affects Bloomington and how it really is part of the fabric of Bloomington and Monroe County. And I want to give each of you a chance to sort of respond to that and from what you've seen this week. Byron, let's start with you.
Well, I was not able to go to the service or ceremony. It's clear that the Dalai Lama has had a very profound influence in the world and also in particular in this community because of the ties with his older brother. And I'm grateful that we've had that connection. I was grateful to be able to participate in the interfaith service that was held last year when the Dalai Lama came, and there was a service at St. Paul's Catholic Church. And that was a wonderful occasion. More recently this spring, a number of us participated from various faith traditions in a service at the Tibetan Cultural Center in light of the military crackdown that was taking place in Tibet. So I'm grateful that we have these kinds of ties and that we get a sense of the larger world and what's at stake for us in seeking peace together.
Mm-hmm. Rabbi Mira?
Well, you mentioned this week, so maybe it's a good opportunity to mention something that's been happening that got some coverage in the paper as well. But many of our congregations that are represented here today have recently been involved in a Habitat for Humanity interfaith build. And the house is up, and we're thrilled about that. And there will be a dedication this coming Sunday. So just another example of how our communities have come together mm-hmm. recently.
Zainab?
For the Muslims, the holy month of Ramadan, the month of fasting, began last week. And this brings us together with, we were going to have a breaking of the fast at the Tibetan Cultural Center this evening, but out of respect for the passing away of Professor Norbu, we have postponed it, perhaps to some other occasion. We have also broken bread with the Beit Shalom community also during this time. And again, the Ramadan falls within Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. The same thing happened last year and the year before, I think. And also, we for the last several years, we have been having a joint breaking of the fast or an iftar with the Unitarian Church. And about 300 people show up to that. So it's probably one of the largest interfaith breaking of fasts, certainly, that I've ever attended.
Mm-hmm. All right. Our phone numbers today, we're talking about religious diversity in our community. Our phone numbers are 855-0811 and 877-285-9348. And you can send your email to noon@indiana.edu. And this email is what we've been talking about is a good segue into this email. because it just says, first question, just tell me what you think is the big picture about religious diversity in a town in the middle of southern Indiana. And then there's some follow-up questions. How do you think the local schools do with handling a religiously diverse population? What do you think could be done to increase people's knowledge of religious diversity in our town? And what is the goal of the Monroe County Religious Leaders Group? So there are three sort of broad, big questions. But let's start with this whole issue of let's start with the schools. How do they do in the big picture? Byron, do you want to?
Well, let me take a stab at that. Monroe County Religious Leaders actually invited two of the superintendents of public schools, MCCSE and Richard Beanblossom, to meet with us end of last year, I think it was, about 8-10 months ago. And it was because we were concerned about what we see as some of the challenges that religious diversity and other kinds of diversity pose in the public schools. We hear reports not infrequently about bullying and name-calling and other kinds of stereotyping of students of a particular religious background. And what became clear from those conversations with the superintendents is that this is an ongoing challenge in which they are deeply involved on a day-by-day basis. It's something that was beyond even what we had encountered in secondhand reports and through our religious communities and so on. It has to be worked at all the time. There are religious divides not only among faith traditions – but within faith traditions. And I think maybe some of those divisions within faith traditions are some of the most difficult to deal with because you have in Bloomington a huge diversity, and more so in probably most communities of this size, which on the one hand makes for the possibility of interfaith relations of the sorts we've been talking about here for a few moments. On the other hand, you also have a kind of cultural divide between those who have different views on social issues, the so-called culture wars. So Bloomington is quite divided when it comes to the kinds of cultural issues, abortion, gay and lesbian and bisexual and transgender rights, other kinds of sexual morality kinds of issues, even the issue of war. I mean, I think these are issues where we end up with fairly significant cultural divides within religious traditions as well as across the traditions.
Mm-hmm. Mira?
Within the schools, I think it's a real mixed picture. Some of the schools and some teachers have been just exemplary in reaching out, working hard to include kids of diverse religious backgrounds and also making sure that what kids learn in the classroom prepares them for encountering people from a variety of backgrounds as they go forward in life. It's still hard, I know, to be a Jewish kid who's the only Jewish kid in a class or even in a school. Particularly at holiday times, kids from minority backgrounds, our own holidays don't correspond necessarily to the Christian calendar that most people are familiar with. And so there's sometimes not sensitivity that we're in a holy season and kids might need to miss school or not do homework. And on the other side, when Christian holidays come around, there's sometimes a presumption that all kids will be getting presents or participating in festivities. And that's not the case for little Jewish kids or Muslim kids. So that's something that parents engage teachers and principals on all the time. And for the most part, people are really responsive, and sometimes we need to have more conversations.
Zainab?
I would agree with Mira, but I have to say I think it was 3 or 4 years ago that the school system had some kind of very large event, a workshop type thing for parents, administrators, teachers, and students. It was a huge event at Bloomington High School South, and I was invited to speak. So I do think while there may be problems occasionally, I think the school system is very much aware and wants to, you know, educate everyone about diversity and how to deal with diversity, particularly religious diversity.
Mm-hmm. I'll give Rinpoche an opportunity to respond as well.
Yes. Actually, I agree. Other guests said those things. Particularly, that's a school system. I haven't been, you know, participated yet. When I was in Tibet, I know a little bit Western, religion and the philosophy and the culture a little bit. And then 1998, some political issue, then I have to escape. Then I escaped. I was in California. So California is a more open and the liberal place. So then 2 years ago, then His Holiness asked me to go to the Indiana to work. Then I thought, oh, this is maybe very different. So actually, when I come here, then I find out, people are town very friendly, very open, very liberal. Then also some guests mentioned that, last year we had that interfaith program. So I guess the school system is wonderful. Education, I guess, is very important. So we have to, we are searching for peace. So the peace from inner peace, actually. The inner peace based on the loving kindness and compassion. So that's the kind of education when, the kids are young, we should let them to aware. That's why I guess those are wonderful things. Of course, our culture and background a little bit different. There's lots of things to do, I think.
Mm-hmm. All right. I want to go to Byron because there was another question that I think you could answer, and I know Mara could talk about this too. What is the goal of the Monroe County Religious Leaders Group?
Well, fortunately, I brought along our current mission statement. Formally, we are to advocate for the religious principles of mercy, peace, social and economic justice, and stewardship of the earth. To expand on that a little bit, we are interfaith. We have people from Jewish, Muslim, Baha'i, the Tibetan Cultural Center, Protestant and Roman Catholic and Unitarian and other traditions who participate actively in our group. Those who do, for the most part, do that out of a social justice commitment or perspective that they understand to be inherent in their religious tradition. This is certainly so for the three major so-called Western religious traditions of Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. But with the emphasis on peace in Buddhism and in other religious traditions, I think there's a congruence there as well. And so we have a whole list of issues that we have tried to address out of a concern that we believe our God or that which enlivens us to worship calls us to be concerned about the world and the conditions of the lives of people in the world, and that's a social justice dimension.
Mm-hmm. Mira, your interaction with that group, and what's it meant to you, and what do you hope to get from that group?
Yeah, it actually came to life about 4 years ago when members of Beth Shalom came to me, and they were concerned that what was being called religious issues or values issues in the press around the last election didn't seem to embrace our religious tradition and our commitment to social justice, concern for the poor, for the rights of women, and for peace. And at their invitation, we invited a variety of religious communities to join us in talking about how we might make a difference and reclaim as values issues topics like war and peace and justice for poor people. And so for me, and I think for members of my community, this has been a way to enlarge our voice so that we're not lonely in our concern and pursuit of these things, but find that we have really good friends and neighbors to find common cause with and to work together with as activists.
All right. Our phone numbers again, 855-0811 or 877-285-9348, or you can send your email to noon@indiana.edu. All of you work so well together, and I guess this is the big, broad question. It seems like a lot of when you look at things happening on the international stage, there's a lot of strife, a lot of conflict that seems to have religion as part of its base. Can anybody give me a brief history lesson, or tell me what can we do here locally to try to address those much larger issues and differences?
Can I jump in? It seems to me that Byron said something that's really on the money in talking about religious diversity and conflict, that often the most prickly and difficult conflicts are not between religions but within religions. I think that's borne out somewhat. I always find it easy to talk to the people around the table today, but there's some real conflict within each of our religious communities. I think it's fair to say nothing like what would make a newspaper, but I think the really hard issues are the ones we have with the people who are closest to us.
Mm-hmm. Zainab?
I absolutely agree with Mira on this. I absolutely agree. And I find that most of the conflicts that are couched in religious terms actually have absolutely nothing to do with religion and are either about politics or something else. Mm-hmm. I mean, take, for example, the war in Ireland. It's always been said to be Protestant against Catholic, but it's not. Mm-hmm. Or that the Arab-Israeli conflict is between Jews and Muslims. I would take issue with that. I would take very big issue with that. Mm-hmm. So it is that is about it's a conflict about land. It's not about religion. Mm-hmm. So I don't not in today's world. I really don't think it's about religion.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let me comment a little bit further about that. You've asked a terribly complex question. I mean, in terms of what we can do, we're trying to do it through Monroe County religious leaders and other cooperative ways that interfaith activities take place. But the notion of a culture war, which I think is not just something that we experience here at home and in the United States, but something that we're experiencing around the globe, suggests multiple dimensions of differences among peoples. And religion is a part of culture and a very significant part of culture. But then you have other kinds of elements, you know, the way in which a political society is structured, the economic history and practices and so on. So you get these differences where religion becomes appropriated or exploited, co-opted often as a motivating force and a part of the culture for some kind of conflict that's much larger than whatever the religious differences might be.
All right. Well, we've hit halftime. We've already gone through half the program, and this is going to go very fast today. So I hope that people who have questions or comments will phone us or email us. We're talking today about religious diversity in our community. Let me run through our guests again. Zainab Istrabadi is a lecturer for the Indiana University Department of Near Eastern Languages and Cultures and a member of the Bloomington Muslim community, as well as being a graduate of both Bloomington North and Indiana University. Rabbi Mira Wasserman of Congregation Beth Shalom is here. Byron Bangert, Presbyterian minister at large and one of the founders of the Monroe County Religious Leaders Organization. And Arja Rinpoche, director of the Tibetan, Mongolian, and Buddhist Cultural Center, is here with us today. You're listening to Noon Edition. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Noon Edition on member-supported WFIU. Production support comes from Closets 2, providing organized and expanded closet and storage space for home office and garage using a variety of systems with no major renovations. Closets 2 owned and operated in Bloomington, 332-2233. And from South Dunn Street Project, represented by Brian Lappin Real Estate, classic bungalow-inspired architecture in the Bryan Park neighborhood of Bloomington, www.southdunstreet.info. WFIU thanks all who support public radio. Next time you're visiting one of our business supporters, please let them know that you appreciate their support of WFIU. Perhaps you're involved in decision-making at a business or profession in the WFIU listening area. If you'd like your message to reach WFIU listeners, you can find out more about benefits of underwriting with a call to 1-800-662-3311 or a visit to our website at wfiu.org.
We did at that time, and it happened. I mean, if somebody reports them, we'd be the source. But.
All right. Welcome back to New Edition. We were having quite a conversation off the air until we came back on the air. And I want to again mention our guest, Zainab Istrabadi, who is in the Bloomington Muslim community, Rabbi Mira Wasserman of Congregation Beth Shalom, Byron Bangert, Presbyterian minister at large and one of the founders of Monroe County Religious Leaders, and Arja Rinpoche, director of the Tibetan Mongolian Buddhist Cultural Center. If you have questions or comments, phone us at 855-0811 or 877-285-9348. And you can send your email to noon@indiana.edu. We have lots of different topics we can talk about. I do want to acknowledge September 11th was yesterday, and I know that there have been issues, at least worldwide, in regard to the Muslim community. I think there's some concerns often within the Muslim community about treatment from people who are not in that community. I know I was at a meeting probably within the last year or 18 months with some Muslim leaders in Bloomington about some issues that had come up in letters to the editor and some things that had happened. So Zainab, I just wanted to ask you about what's the certain – or the current sort of atmosphere and environment.
Honestly, the atmosphere has been one of tremendous support. That is, there's only been one incident, I think, or maybe two incidents involving the property of the mosque itself. And this was 3 or 4 years ago that somebody threw some kind of gasoline bottle. Mm-hmm. Into the mosque with the hopes of burning it down, and it was put out very quickly. And then there was this tremendous outpouring of support from the Jewish community, from the Christian community. I mean, I could name various churches and all. People basically gathered and walked from their places of worship, and they all congregated at the mosque. It was a very, very, very moving and touching experience for us, who I think until that point had been feeling a little besieged, and but not since, because of the loving outpouring of support.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Of the Bloomington community, without exception.
Right. That's good. Great. Okay. I have another email that came in, and this one says, "My upbringing in central Indiana in the 1950s and 1960s was pretty isolated and conservative. I love Bloomington and its diversity and love getting to know about all the cultures, but I'm always fearful I might say the wrong thing or ask the wrong question." So this questioner says to you, what do each of you find is the innocent insensitivity, for lack of a better term, that you hear most often about your religion? Do you understand this question?
I think people. Yes. It's
like, yeah. Rinpoche, do you have any? No?
Okay. I don't understand.
Oh, okay.
I understand the question.
I think the question is basically that this is somebody who grew up in conservative southern Indiana and might want to come up and talk to you, but it's afraid that he or she might say the wrong thing because of insensitivity to your culture. Do you have people that say things that you...
No, maybe people might ask, that's a very interesting question. I would like to give a little bit of comments. In front of our center has a little church, you know, Catholic church, like a Protestant, I guess. You know, I'm not sure which school it is. But one lady from the church to our center and prayed like that. And then after all of them, then she said, I thought you were worshiping like idols and devils like that. So in fact, not. So I understand like that. So that was her comment. And then she left.
Uh-huh.
So anyway, I guess the interfaith program here we're doing, that's very important. When I was in China, Chinese government always say the religion and the political have to be separate. But actually, you know, they're using religion For instance, myself as a High Lama in Tibet, so I also holding many political positions. So sometimes I have to say something I don't want to say that is by their political purpose, like so on. So, but anyway, I have been here in the United States. Also, United States emphasizes this too. You know, the church and the states is separate. Actually, that's the right thing, but I don't think really separate. Sometimes a little bit separate, sometimes always combined together. So my understanding is all the religion has very wonderful faith and understanding. For instance, Buddhists always emphasize compassion. So that's compassion, no matter your friend or your enemy, you have to be a compassionate. The Christian and the Catholic or all emphasize this love. The Muslim and the other tradition like peaceful and the peace and so on. So all of the concepts, there's no conflicts. But the religion used as a tool, then different. If I'm a bad person, I use religion to start the war, I can do. So that's why the September 11, you know, yesterday was the 7 years anniversary. So I was remember that. So after that, had the, almost continuing war in the Middle West. So I was very, sorry for that. And that's a sad thing. I think all religions should work together, and religion as a tool for peace, not for war. Mm-hmm. That's just my kind of comments. But anyway, for your question, anybody want to ask any very strange question or whatever, then I always welcome.
Do you find that people will walk up to you? I mean, you...
Sometimes do, a little bit. So otherwise, no, not really difficult questions, but sometimes people are asking a little bit strange questions mm-hmm. too, yeah.
Okay.
I think the best thing really is to ask. You know, when we first came to this country as immigrants in 1970 and we settled here in Bloomington, I went from belonging to a so-called majority culture to a minority, whether religious, cultural, language, otherwise. And the best thing really is to simply ask if one isn't sure. I mean, the first time I walked into a church, I asked, what should I do? What is the proper way of entering into a sanctuary? I also asked the first time I walked into a synagogue and so on. Mm-hmm. So there's nothing wrong with asking. But getting back to your question, I think the thing that disheartens me the most is when I run into people who think that Muslims worship an idol called Allah. First of all, it is Allah, which is God's name in Arabic. I mean, I cannot help it if my mother tongue is Arabic. If I were French, I would say Dieu, or if I were Spanish, I would say Dios. In Arabic, it is Allah. In Aramaic, the language that Jesus spoke, he would have said Allaha. And then in the Torah, there is Elohim and there is Eloah. So they all sound the same. They're from the same root. So cannot people realize that Muslims worship whoever, Moses fell on his knees and put his forehead on the ground. Whoever Moses worshipped, whoever Jesus said, my father, referred to as my father, we worship the God. He is the only God we believe anyway. We don't worship the moon god, contrary to what Pat Robertson has said. And there's only one god. It's the god of Moses, Jesus, Abraham, and Muhammad. Mm-hmm. And everybody can figure out who that is. I'm not going to tell them who it is.
Mira, any response to this question?
I think people can't go wrong in asking questions. I think it only seems insensitive when people presume that they know something that I don't know and that I should know. Or worse, I guess, is that they believe something that I don't believe and should believe. So that should. And sometimes people very generously, very graciously understand themselves to be helping me in sharing their experience and their faith. And that's a hard situation because I'm pretty clear on my faith being right for me. So I appreciate the graciousness and the caring, but I'm not going to change my belief system. Mm-hmm. So,
Byron, any response?
Well, yes. I'm a Christian, and so as a member of what is really the dominant religious tradition in our culture, this listener's question probably doesn't apply quite as much to me. I mean, people are usually concerned about miscues or mistakes in how they think and act toward people of other religious traditions. But I'd say two things. One, Christianity itself is tremendously diverse, and so just because you know some things about Christianity doesn't mean you know about a particular Christian tradition. But the larger or maybe the more pointed response I could give would be the thing that troubles me most is people who assume that there's some profound and radical difference between reason and faith. And that if you're a person who's religious, you're not rational. I encounter this not infrequently in subtle ways. I mean, there's just a presumption that that if you are really rational, intelligent person and you've got it intellectually and together and so forth, you're probably not going to be religious. And I think that that's a rather offensive perspective. And each of us has ways of working out how we think about the world and how we reason about the world that we find to be compatible with our faith.
Mm-hmm. All right. 855-0811, 877-285-9348, and noon@indiana.edu. We still have about 15 minutes left in the program. There was a major survey done by the Pew Research Center's Forum on Religion, and Public Life that's going to, I think, follow along pretty well to what we're talking about today. It said that most Americans have a non-dogmatic approach to faith. Majority of those who are affiliated with a religion, for instance, do not believe their religion is the only way to salvation, and almost the same number believes that there is more than one true way to interpret the teachings of their religion. How do you respond to that? This seems to be, according to the Pew Center, this is a majority of people believe that way. Yet if you read the popular media, including my newspaper, you probably wouldn't recognize this. Any response? Mira, do you have a response?
Yeah, I find that very reassuring actually. And I think it's important to remember also that there are religious traditions that are non-dogmatic. So that shouldn't surprise us actually. It is a teaching of some of the religions that there are multiple paths to the good life, to righteousness, to holiness, and to the afterlife. But I think that kind of attitude is a hopeful message that we can really learn to get along.
Mm-hmm. Byron?
I'm not quite sure what to make of the evidence or the survey research. Certainly you find a lot of movement, let's say, within Christianity among denominations. This increases. So, maybe 50% of the people who are joining one of the downtown Protestant churches in Bloomington might come from some other Protestant tradition other than the particular denomination of the church they're joining. I don't see a huge leaps, though, being made by most people in terms of the kinds of moves that they make. A lot of people at this point have given up dogma. I think Mira's point about there are religious traditions that don't emphasize dogma. There are also a lot of people within even churches that do have a doctrinal tradition who have decided they want to be spiritual. They don't want to be religious or whatever. And by spiritual, they want to have some kind of sensitivity to what they consider to be the ultimate meaningful dimensions of life, the spiritual world or whatever. But they really don't want to buy into all the creeds or the dogma and teaching. And so they're troubled by the institutional forms of religion insofar as they emphasize these dogmas.
Mm-hmm. I may get back to this question, but we have a phone call. So let's go to the phone. And Wayne is on the line. Wayne?
Hi. Could I ask two quick questions?
Sure, you can.
First question. Is it possible for a person not to have a religion, for a person not to be religious? If you assume that religion is the guiding assumptions, the unproven assumptions by which we form our values, can there be anyone without religion? First question.
All right. Anybody want to respond to that?
I think I know the caller, and let me try and take a shot at this, Wayne. If you're a student of religious studies, there's always this question that exists within the tradition, within the scholarly field. What is it that constitutes religion? And there are those who want to argue that there's just no way to define religion, and you sort of have to do a phenomenological approach. People who call themselves religious are religious or whatever. I mean, there are others who want to say, well, if it has these characteristics, if you can be highly enthusiastic about it, if you can commit your life to it, if you can spend all kinds of time and money at it, well, then maybe it's religion. I mean, like sports, for example. You know, in Bloomington, there are a lot of people who go about sports as if it was a religion. And some people would be probably willing to say, from an anthropological perspective, sport is a religion. I don't know really how to go any beyond that in terms of trying to answer the question. Paul Tillich was a Protestant theologian who said religion is our ultimate concern, and that he was in a Lutheran tradition, and that was actually fairly similar to something Martin Luther said. So that which concerns us ultimately and claims us ultimately might be one way of thinking about it, and if that's the case, then many people who might say they don't have a religion probably implicitly do.
Mm-hmm. Rinpoche?
Yes.
Second question?
Oh, wait just a second. Rinpoche has a response.
Oh, okay. Thank you. So that's reminding me something. Last week, somebody asked me how many percentages philosophy in Buddhism and how many percentages of ritual thing in your Tibetan Buddhist tradition. Then I I thought that's a good question. Then I said 70% of that's philosophy and 30% is ritual. Of course, you go to a Tibetan temple, you have very fancy, beautiful altars and so on. So, but the idea is, His Holiness Dalai Lama always said that, if you come to my teaching or something, you know, you can keep your tradition, wherever you are, Christianity or Muslim or whatever, or non-believer. So our approach or our teaching is, you know, concerned people, human beings are be a good person, not to be a Buddhist or something. So that's why my response is wherever you are, believer or non-believer, you can learn different traditions and take the good essence from the different traditions to our life. So this is kind of my answer.
Okay. All right, Wayne.
May I give a very short answer from a different perspective?
Sure. Okay.
In our holy book, the Quran, it says that the whole of creation praises the Almighty. So everyone, there are people who are praising God and they are aware that they are praising. And there are people who are praising God who are not yet aware that they are praising him.
All right, Wayne. Question number two.
Second question. The New York Times published a full-page advertisement just prior to 9/11. Now, I heard about this ad. I did not see it. But I know that it featured the New York skyline, showing the New York skyline with the Twin Towers, then showing another picture showing the New York skyline conspicuously without the Twin Towers, and the caption was, "The Effect of Religion." And it was sponsored by the Freedom From Religion organization. Please comment, and I'll take my answer off the air, please.
All right, Wayne. Thanks. Byron, do you have a comment on that? Are you aware of that?
I'm not aware of it, but I regard it as most unfortunate. I don't know whether we want to go where I would want to go with this question or not, but since I'm not convinced at all that the story we've been given about 9/11 is true, and I'm not convinced at all that there were Muslim terrorist hijackers who were primarily responsible for 9/11, that makes this ad even worse. I mean, the presumption behind it is that you've got fanatical Muslim terrorists who are responsible for 9/11. I reject that.
Okay. Anybody have any other reaction, Mira?
Yeah, I guess my reaction – I mean, I think it is unfortunate. And I saw religion at work in the response to 9/11, where people poured out of their homes and found solace with each other. I think religion and God was there as people responded with lots of acts of bravery and courage and, above all, with compassion. So that's where I find religion.
We have another caller, but I want to mention this since you brought it up. There's another major report, and again from the Pew Center, it was done in 2002, that said the majority of Americans believe the lesson to learn from 9/11 is that there is not enough religion in the world versus there is too much. So that was another.
Well, if I may, Bob, I mean these criminals were born into Muslim families. But I do not find what they did on September 11th, 2001, in which, by the way, I lost a friend who was a Pakistani and a Muslim. I do not find what they did to be motivated by religion. In fact, I would say that these are probably the most irreligious people that one could possibly come across, because there is nothing in Islam that justifies the taking of the lives of innocent people.
Mm-hmm. All right. Let's go to the phones. And Jeff is on the line. Jeff?
Well, I'd just like to quickly say that I was very happy to hear the gentleman say that he believed that we don't know the full story behind 9/11. After reading the book, The New Pearl Harbor, I have a profound respect for my ignorance as to what really happened. But that being said, the reason I called is I'd like to ask the panelists if they could, any of them, feel comfortable commenting on their perception of their own faith as it relates to the concept of certainty. I mean, is it possible to have complete faith in your beliefs and believe them, obviously, and still admit in that same brain that believes those tenets that you are human, and part of being human is that we are not God. We are human and can err, and we have limited powers of perception and understanding, and maybe we are right, and maybe just as possibly, although not invalidating our beliefs, maybe just as possibly the person who has a different faith, maybe they could be right too. I mean, is it possible to think that maybe in some respect we're all right if we believe and it makes sense for our lives, it helps us guide our lives to be good people and to interact lovingly and in a cooperative, compassionate sense with other people. If the details are different, maybe we're all right in a sense. Is that too much of a duality? Or I'd like to know maybe some of the panelists' thoughts on that.
We will get their thoughts. Thank you very much for the question. Who wants to start?
I'll be very quick. I personally, and here now I'm speaking for myself, I have absolutely no problem with what the gentleman just said. And I can back my belief with verses from the Quran. So I don't have a problem with it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that actually resonates a lot with my own religious life. I think part of being religious for me is acknowledging my smallness, and anything I believe in is going to be a lot greater than my understanding. And I presume that other people and other cultures and religions have answers that I don't.
Mm-hmm. Byron?
Well, I would second or third what Zainab and Mira have just said. And maybe it's helpful to make a distinction between certitude and certainty. I do not have certainty really about much of anything. Certitude is a kind of more of a conviction about the fact that my experience doesn't completely lead me astray, and that I do know enough about the way things are in the world that I can act and live and do so with some level of confidence, but never with the kind of certainty that I don't give up questioning and don't and completely disregard or never want to hear an alternative point of view or anything of that sort.
And Rinpoche, you've addressed this a little bit already in the program,
yes.
But could you
yes.
follow up?
Again, my understanding is religion as a tool. So that's a tool for war or a tool for peace. So that's really up to us. So my understanding is either non-believer or a believer, that's religion. It doesn't matter. So people develop that material life. Then after that, have to develop that mental life. So in China, for instance, they emphasize that's non-belief and the earlier they mentioned the religion as a poison, but later on, you know, lots of different religion and different new religion come out, then they affect the government. So that's just one point they're showing that kind of thing. So that's why I don't think even that's 9/11 and every different sad events, that's not from this Buddhist, religious perspective, but you know, somebody just using that as a tool to start some different very tragedies or something. So that's why for me, it's no problem.
Okay. We have about 2 minutes to go in the program. So I want to get back to a question that one of our emailers posed earlier and give you each 30 seconds or so to try to answer it. What do you think could be done to increase people's knowledge of religious diversity in our community? Who wants to start that?
Yes.
Rinpoche?
Harmony and more understanding and we, you know, communication and cooperation. Eventually, the you know all interface leaders should work together and should bring more peace for the world.
All right, Zainab.
I would say to get over that feeling of fear. I mean, I'm speaking now from personal experience of being willing to walk into a church or into a synagogue. Any temple of worship without feeling any trepidation. I think people should just visit each other the way one would go and knock, you know, on the door of a neighbor and say, hi, I live next door to you.
Mm-hmm. All right. Mira?
Yeah, I think an openness to asking questions and also to sharing sort of our deepest values and what moves us in life, where we find meaning, to have those conversations with a wide array of people has to be broadening.
Mm-hmm. And Byron?
Well, I think a program like this is a really good start. and I would say, yes, Bloomington has lots of opportunities to participate in interfaith kinds of activities and services and so on, and to take advantage of that would be one thing. And another would be we have an excellent Department of Religious Studies, which is often putting on programs that are also accessible to the public. And there are other kinds of programs that take place within the community or at the university that also have religion as an important dimension. So to take advantage of all those rich opportunities to learn more.
Mm-hmm. I don't know about a lot of other communities, but I will say that you know my long time in Bloomington, the interfaith cooperation in Bloomington has been something to see. If any issues come up, everybody does seem to get together, which mm-hmm. is a great thing. So we're out of time. I want to thank our guests today, Zainab Istrabadi, Rabbi Mira Wasserman, Byron Bangert, and Arja Rinpoche. For Mary Catherine Carmichael, who couldn't be with us today, producer Ariana Prothero, and engineer Mike Pashkash, I'm Bob Salzberg. Thanks for listening.
Noon Edition is a production of WFIU and the Herald Times. A podcast of this and other WFIU programs is available at wfiu.org.